Disc 5.
The Force is unusually strong with him, that much is clear. Who was his father? There was a long pause, long enough for the Jedi Master to realize he had asked a question she was not prepared to answer. He gave her time and space to deal with the matter, not pressing her, not making it seem as if it were necessary she answer at all. "There is no father," she said finally. She shook her head slowly. "I carried him. I gave birth to him. I raised him. I can't tell you any more than that." She touched his arm, drawing his eyes to meet hers. "Can you help him?" Qui-Gon was silent for a long time, thinking. He felt an attachment to Anakin Skywalker he could not explain. In the back of his mind, he sensed he was meant to do something for this boy, that it was necessary he try. But all Jedi were identified within the first 6 months of birth and given over to their training. It was true for him, for Obi-Wan, for everyone he knew or had heard about. There were no exceptions. "Can you help him?" He did not know how that was possible. "I don't know," he told her, keeping his voice gentle but firm. "I didn't come here to free slaves. Had he been born in the Republic, we would have identified him early, and he might have become a Jedi. He has the way. I'm not sure what I can do for him." She nodded in resignation, but her face revealed, beneath the mask of her acceptance, a glimmer of hope. As Anakin tightened the wiring on the thruster relays to the left engine, a group of his friends appeared. The older boys were Kitster and Seek, the younger girl was Amy, and the Rodian was Wald. Anakin broke off his efforts to complete the wiring long enough to introduce them to Padme, Jar Jar, and R2-D2.
"Wow! A real astromech droid!" Kitster exclaimed, whistling softly. "How'd you get so lucky?"
Anakin shrugged.
"That isn't the half of it," he declared, puffing up a bit. "I'm entered in the Bunta tomorrow."
Kitster made a face and pushed back his mop of dark hair.
"What, with this?" "That piece of junk has never even been off the ground," Wald said, nudging Amy. "This is such a joke, Annie." "You've been working on that thing for years," Amy observed, her small, delicate features twisting in disapproval. She shook her blonde head. "It's never going to run."
Anakin started to say something in defense of himself, then decided against it. Better to let them think whatever they wanted for now. He would show them.
"Come on, let's go play ball,"
Seek suggested, already turning away, a hint of boredom in his voice.
"Keep it up, Annie, and you're going to be bug squash."
Seek, Wald, and Amy hurried off, laughing back at him. But Kitster was his best friend and knew better than to doubt Anakin when he said he was going to do something. So Kitster stayed behind, ignoring the others.
"What do they know?" he said quietly.
Anakin gave him a grin of appreciation. Then he noticed Jar Jar fiddling with the left engine's energy binder plate, the power source that locked the engines together and kept them in sync, and the grin disappeared.
"Hey, Jar Jar!" he shouted in warning. "Stay away from those energy binders!"
The Gungan, bent close to the protruding plate, looked up guiltily.
"Who, me?"
Anakin put his hands on his hips.
"If your hand gets caught in the beam, it'll go numb for hours."
Jar Jar screwed up his face, then put his hands behind his back and stuck his billed face back down by the plate. Almost instantly, an electric current arced from the plate to his mouth, causing him to yelp and jump back in shocked surprise. Both hands clamped over his mouth as he stood staring at the boy in disbelief.
"It's numb! It's numb!"
Jar Jar mumbled, his long tongue hanging loosely.
"My tongue is fat! That's my big ol' oucho!"
Anakin shook his head and went back to work on the wiring. Kitster moved close to him, watching silently, his dark face intense.
"You don't even know if this thing will run, Annie," he observed with a frown.
Anakin didn't look up. "It will."
Qui-Gon Jinn appeared at his shoulder. "I think it's about time we found out."
He handed the boy a small, bulky cylinder. "Use this power pack. I picked it up earlier in the day. Watto has less need for it than you."
One corner of his mouth twitched in a mix of embarrassment and amusement.
Anakin knew the value of a power pack.
How the Jedi had managed to secure one from under Watto's nose, he had no idea and no interest in finding out.
"Yes, sir," he beamed.
He jumped into the cockpit, fitted the power pack into its sleeve in the control panel, and set the activator to the on position. Then he pulled on his old dented racing helmet and gloves. As he did so, Jar Jar, who had been fiddling around at the back of one of the engines, managed to get his hand caught in the afterburner. The Gungan began leaping up and down in terror, his mouth still numb from the shock he had received from the energy binders, his bill flapping to no discernible purpose. Padme caught sight of him at the last minute, his arms windmilling frantically, and yanked him free an instant before the engines ignited.
Flame exploded from the afterburners, and a huge roar rose from the radon ulzers, building steadily in pitch until Anakin eased off on the thrusters, then settling back into a throaty rumble. Cheers rose from the spectators, and Anakin waved his hand in response. On the porch of their home, Shmi Skywalker watched wordlessly, her eyes distant and sad.
Twilight brought a blaze of gold and crimson in the wake of Tatooine's departing suns, a splash of color that filled the horizon in a long, graceful sweep. Night climbed after, darkening the sky, bringing out the stars like scattered shards of crystal. In the deepening black, the land was silent and watchful. A gleam of bright metal caught the last of the fading sun's rays, and a small transport sped out of the dune sea toward Mos Espa. Shovel-nosed and knife-edged, its wings swept back and its vertical stabilizers crimped inward top to bottom, it hugged the landscape as it climbed promontories and descended valleys, searching. Dark and immutable, it had the look of a predator, of a hunter at work. Beyond the dune sea, following the failing light, the craft settled swiftly on the broad plateau of a mesa that gave a long-range view of the land in all directions. Wild banthas scattered with its approach, tossing their hairy heads and massive horns, trumpeting their disapproval. The transport came to rest, and its engines shut down. It sat there in silence, waiting. Then the aft hatchway slid open, metal stairs lowered, and Darth Maul appeared. The Sith Lord had discarded his black robes and wore loose-fitting desert garb, a collared coat belted at the waist, his lightsaber hanging within easy reach. His stunted horns, fully exposed now with his hood removed, formed a wicked crown above his strange red and black-colored face. Ignoring the banthas, he walked to the edge of the mesa, produced a pair of low-light electro-binoculars, and began to scan the horizon in all directions. Desert sand and rocks, he was thinking. Wasteland. But a city there, and another there, and there, a third. He took the electro-binoculars from his eyes. The lights of the cities were clearly visible against the growing dark. If there were others, they were far on the other side of the dune sea where he had already been, or beyond the horizon, much farther still, where he would later be required to go. But the Jedi, he believed, were here. There was no expression on his mosaic face, but his yellow eyes gleamed expectantly. Soon now. Soon. He lifted his arm to view the control panel strapped to his forearm, picked out the settings he wished to engage, and punched in the calculations required to identify the enemy he was looking for.
Jedi Knights would manifest a particularly strong presence in the Force. It took only a minute. He turned back toward his ship. Spherical probe droids floated through the hatchway, one after another. When all were clear, they rocketed away toward the cities he had identified. Darth Maul watched until they were out of view, the darkness closing quickly now. He smiled faintly. Soon. Then he walked back to his ship to begin monitoring their response. Darkness cloaked Mos Espa in deepening layers as night descended. Anakin sat quietly on the balcony rail of his back porch, while Qui-Gon studied a deep cut in the boy's arm. Anakin had sustained the cut sometime during the afternoon's prep work on the pod racer, and in typical boy fashion he hadn't even noticed it until now. Anakin gave the injury a cursory glance as the Jedi prepared to clean it, then leaned back to look up at the blanket of stars in the sky. "Sit still, Annie," Qui-Gon instructed. The boy barely heard him.
"There are so many. Do they all have a system of planets?"
"Most of them." Qui-Gon produced a clean piece of cloth.
"Has anyone been to all of them?"
Qui-Gon laughed. "Not likely." Anakin nodded, still looking up.
"I want to be the first one, then. The first to see them all. Ouch!"
Qui-Gon wiped a smear of blood from the boy's arm, then applied some antiseptic. "There, good as new."
"Annie, bedtime," Shmi called out from inside.
Qui-Gon produced a comlink chip and wiped a sample of Anakin's blood onto its surface. The boy leaned forward interestedly.
"What are you doing?"
The Jedi barely looked up. "Checking your blood for infections." Anakin frowned.
"I've never seen..."
"Annie!"
his mother called again, more insistent this time.
"I'm not going to tell you again."
"Go on," Qui-Gon urged, gesturing toward the doorway. "You have a big day tomorrow." He tucked the cloth into his tunic. "Good night." Anakin hesitated, his eyes fixed on the Jedi Master, intense and questioning. Then he turned and darted off into his home. Qui-Gon waited a moment, making sure he was alone, then slipped the chip with the boy's blood sample into a relay slot in the comlink and called Obi-Wan aboard the Queen's transport. "Yes, Master," his protege responded, alert in spite of the lateness of the hour. "I'm transmitting a blood sample," Qui-Gon advised, glancing about guardedly as he spoke. "Run a midichlorian test on it." He sent the blood readings through the comlink to Obi-Wan and stood waiting in the silence. He could feel the beating of his heart, quick and excited. If he was right about this...
"Master,"
Obi-Wan interrupted his musings, "there must be something wrong with the sample." Qui-Gon took a slow, deep breath and exhaled softly. "What do the readings say, Obi-Wan?"
"They say the midichlorian count is 20,000.
The younger Jedi's voice tightened.
"No one has a count that high. Not even Master Yoda."
"No one." Qui-Gon stood staring out into the night, staggered by the immensity of his discovery. Then he let his gaze wander back toward the hovel where the boy was sleeping, and stiffened. Shmi Skywalker stood just inside the doorway, staring at him. Their eyes met, and for just an instant it felt to the Jedi Master as if the future had been revealed to him in its entirety. Then Shmi turned away, embarrassed, and disappeared back into her home. Qui-Gon paused a moment, then remembered the open comlink. "Good night, Obi-Wan," he said softly, and clicked the transmitter off. Midnight approached. Anakin Skywalker, unable to sleep, had slipped out of his bed and gone down into the backyard to complete a final check of the racer, of its controls, its wiring, its relays, its power source, everything he could think of. Now he stood staring at it, trying to determine what he might have missed, what he might have overlooked. He could afford no mistakes. He must make certain he had done all that he could, so that he would win tomorrow's race. Because he must. He must. He watched R2-D2 scuttle around the racer, applying paint in broad strokes to its polished metal body. Aided by a light projecting from a receptacle mounted over his visual sensors, and a steady stream of advice from C-3PO. The boy had activated the latter earlier on the advice of Padme. "Many hands make light work," she had intoned solemnly, then grinned. C-3PO wasn't much with his hands, but his vocoder was certainly tireless. In any case, R2-D2 seemed to like having him around, exchanging beeps and chirps with his protocol counterpart as he scuttled about the racer. The little astromech droid worked tirelessly, cheerfully, and willingly. Nothing perturbed him. Anakin envied him. Droids were either well put together, or they weren't. Unlike humans, they didn't respond to weariness or disappointment or fear. He chased the thought away quickly and looked up at the starry sky. After a moment, he sat down, his back against a crate of old parts, his goggles and racing helmet at his side. Idly, he fingered the Japur carving in his pocket, the one he was working on for Padme. His thoughts drifted. He couldn't explain it exactly, but he knew that tomorrow would change his life. That strange ability to see what others did not, that sometimes gave him insights into what would happen, told him so. His future was coming up on him in a rush, he sensed. It was closing fast, giving him no time to consider, ascending with the certainty of a sunrise. What would it bring him? The question teased at the edges of his consciousness, refusing to show itself. Change, but in what form? Qui-Gon and his companions were the bringers of that change, but he did not think even the Jedi Knight knew for certain what the end result would be. Maybe the freedom he had dreamed about for himself and his mother, he thought hopefully. Maybe an escape to a new life for both of them. Anything was possible if he won the Bunta. Anything at all. That thought was still foremost in his cluttered, weary mind when his eyes closed and he fell asleep. 12. Anakin Skywalker dreamed that night, and in his dream, he was of a different but indeterminate age. He was young still, though not so young as now, but old too. He was cut from stone, and his thoughts were emblazoned with a vision so frightening he could not bring himself to consider it fully, only to leave it just out of reach, simmering over a fire of ambition and hope. He was in a different place and time, in a world he did not recognize, in a landscape he had never seen. It was vague and shadowy in his dream, all flat and rugged at once, changing with the swiftness of a mirage born out of Tatooine's desert flats. The dream shimmered, and voices reached out to him, soft and distant. He turned toward them, away from a wave of dark movement that suddenly appeared before him, away from the sleep that gave his dream life. "I hope you're about finished," he heard Padme say. But Padme was at the head of the dark wave of his dream, and the wave was an army marching toward him. R2-D2 whistled and beeped, and C-3PO chimed in with hasty assurances, saying everything was done, all was in readiness, and he stirred again. A hand touched his cheek, brushing it softly, and the dream faded and was gone. Anakin blinked awake, rubbing at his eyes, yawning and turning over on his side. He was no longer stretched out by the parts crate where he had fallen asleep the night before, but was back in his own bed. The hand lifted away from his cheek, and Anakin stared up at Padme, at a face he found so beautiful it brought a tightness to his throat. Yet he stared at her in confusion, for she had been the central figure in his dream, different from now, older, sadder, and something more. "You were in my dream," he said, swallowing hard to get the words out.
You were leading a huge army into battle.
The girl stared at him in wonder and then smiled. I hope not. I hate fighting.
Her voice was merry and light, dismissive in a way that bothered him. Your mother wants you to get up now. We have to leave soon.
Anakin climbed to his feet, fully awake. He walked to the back door and stood looking out at the anthill complex of the slave quarters, at the bustle of slaves going about their daily work, at the clear, bright early morning sky that promised good weather for the Bunta Eve race. The podracer hung level before him on its anti-grav lifts, freshly painted and gleaming in the new day's sunlight. R2-D2 bustled about with a brush and can of paint, completing the final detailing of the craft. C-3PO, still missing most of his outer skin, his working parts clearly visible, followed along, pointing out missed patches, giving unsolicited opinions and bits of advice. The sharp wheeze of an Eope brought him around to find Kitster riding toward them on the first of two of the beasts he had commandeered to help haul the podracer to the arena. Kitster's dark face was aglow with expectation, and he waved eagerly at Anakin as he approached. Anakin waved back, shouting, "Hook him up, Kitster!" He turned back to Padme. "Where's Qui-Gon?" The girl gestured. "He left with Jar Jar for the arena. They've gone to find Watto." Anakin sprinted to his bedroom to wash and dress. Qui-Gon Jinn strolled through the main hangar of the Mos Espa Podracer Arena, glancing at the activity about him with seemingly casual interest. The hangar was a cavernous building that housed podracers and equipment year-round and served as a staging area for vehicles and crews on race days. A handful of racers were already in place on the service pads, dozens of aliens who had found their way to Tatooine from every corner of the galaxy crawling all over the pods and engines as pit bosses and pilots shouted instructions. The clash and shriek of metal on metal echoed in an ear-splitting din through the hangar's vast chamber, forcing conversations to be held at something approaching a shout. Jar Jar hugged one shoulder of the Jedi Master while Watto buzzed close by the other. The former was his normal, fretful, nervous self, eyes rolling on their stalks, head twisting this way and that with such frantic concern it seemed certain it must soon twist off altogether. Watto flew with blatant disregard for everything but his own conversation, which rambled on and on, covering the same points endlessly.
"So it must be understood clearly that our bargain is sealed, Outlander,"
he repeated for at least the third time in the last 10 minutes. His blue-snouted head bobbed with emphasis.
"I'll want to see your spaceship the moment the race is over."
He made no bones about the fact that he believed that gaining lawful possession of the Naboo transport was only a matter of time. He had not once, since Qui-Gon had found him at the betting booths, suggested that things might work out otherwise. The Jedi Master demurred with a shrug. "Patience, my blue friend. You'll have your winnings before the sun's set, and my companions and I will be far away from here."
"Not if your ship belongs to me, I think," Watto snorted, and gave a satisfied laugh.
Just as quickly, his sharp eyes fixed on the Jedi.
"I warn you, no funny business."
Qui-Gon kept walking, his gaze directed elsewhere, carefully baiting the hook he had set for the Toydarian. "You don't think Anakin will win?" Watto flew around in front of him and brought them all to a stop. Wings beating furiously, he motioned to a bright orange racer parked close at hand, its engines modified so that when the energy binders were activated and the engines joined, they formed a distinctive X shape. Sitting to one side of the racer was the Dug who had attacked Jar Jar 2 days earlier, Sebulba, his wicked eyes fixed on them, his slender limbs drawn up in a vaguely menacing gesture. A pair of lithesome Twi'leks worked diligently, massaging the Dug's neck and shoulders. The Twi'leks were humanoid aliens from the planet Ryloth. They had pointed teeth, smooth blue skin, and twin tentacles that draped gracefully from their hairless heads down their silken backs. Their red eyes lifted to Qui-Gon momentarily, interest flickering in their depths, then returned quickly to their master. Watto snorted.
"Don't get me wrong," he announced,
shaking his head in an odd cocking motion.
I have great faith in the boy. He is a credit to your species.
His snaggle-toothed mouth tightened.
But Sebulba there is going to win, I think.
Qui-Gon pretended to study the dug carefully. Why?
Because he always wins.
The Toydarian broke into a fit of laughter, consumed by his own cleverness.
I'm betting heavily on Sebulba.
I'll take that bet, Qui-Gon said at once. Watto stopped laughing instantly, jerking away as if scalded by hot oil.
What?
He shook his head in astonishment.
What do you mean?
Qui-Gon advanced a step, backing the Toydarian away. I'll wager my new racing pod against... He trailed off thoughtfully, letting Watto hang. Against, say, the boy and his mother. Watto was aghast.
A pod for slaves? I don't think so.
The blue wings were a blur as he flitted this way and that, head cocked.
Well, perhaps. Just one. The mother, maybe. The boy isn't for sale.
Qui-Gon frowned. The boy is small. He can't be worth much. Watto shook his head decisively. For the fastest pod ever built? Watto shook his head again. Both or no bet? They were standing near the front entry of the hangar, and the noise of the crew work had lessened. Beyond, the arena stands rose against the desert sky, a vast curved complex complete with boxes for the huts, a race announcer's booth, course monitoring equipment, and food stands. Already, the stands were beginning to fill, the population of Mos Espa turning out in full force for the event. Shops and stalls closed, the city on holiday. Bright streamers and banners flew, and approaching racers flamed with the reflection of sunlight and polish. Qui-Gon caught sight of Anakin appearing through the crowds, riding an Eopee with Padme up behind him, towing one of the massive Radon Ulzer engines. His friend Kitster followed on a second Eopee, towing the other engine. The Eopees were gangly, long-snouted pack animals with tough, leathery skin and short fur, particularly well-suited to resisting the Tatooine desert heat. R2-D2 and C-3PO trailed the little procession with the pod and Shmi. The Jedi Master deliberately turned to watch their approach, drawing Watto's gaze after his own. The Toydarian's eyes glittered at the sight of the boy and the racer. He looked back at Qui-Gon and gave an anxious snort.
No pod's worth two slaves. Not by a long shot. One slave or nothing.
Qui-Gon folded his arms over his chest. The boy, then. Watto huffed and shook his head. He jerked with the tension his deliberation was generating inside his pudgy blue body.
No, no.
Then, abruptly, he reached inside his pocket and produced a small cube, which he tossed from one hand to the other as if it were too hot to hold.
We'll let fate decide. Blue, it's the boy. Red, it's the mother.
Watto cast the cube to the hangar floor. As he did, Qui-Gon made a small, surreptitious gesture with one hand, calling on his Jedi power to produce a small inflection in the Force. The cube bounced, rolled, settled, blue side facing up. Watto threw up his hands angrily, his eyes turning narrow and sharp.
You want to toss, Outlander? He sneered in dismissal. But you won't win the race, so it makes little difference, I think.
We'll see, Qui-Gon replied calmly. Anakin and the others reached them, entering the hangar with the pod and engines. Watto wheeled away from Qui-Gon in a huff, pausing long enough to snap irritably at the boy.
Better stop your friend's betting, he declared with an angry snort, or I'll end up owning him too.
One of the Eopees sniffed expectantly at him, and he swore at the beast in Huttese with such ferocity that it backed away. His wings beating madly, Watto gave Qui-Gon a withering glance and flew off into the hangar shadows. What did he mean by that? Anakin asked as he slowed the Eopee beside Qui-Gon, glancing after the retreating Toydarian. Qui-Gon shrugged. I'll tell you later. Kitster pulled to a stop beside Anakin, his face alight with excitement as he looked around.
"This is so wizard! I'm sure you'll do it this time, Annie."
Padme's gaze shifted from one to the other. "Do what?" she asked suspiciously. Kitster beamed.
"Finish the race, of course."
The girl paled. Her eyes burned into Anakin.
"You've never even finished a race?"
she demanded incredulously. The boy blushed.
"Well, not exactly."
His mouth tightened with determination.
"But Kitster's right. I will this time."
Qui-Gon took the Eopee's reins in his hand and patted the boy's leg. "Of course you will," he agreed. From atop the Eopee, Padme Nayberry just stared at him wordlessly. In the center of Mos Espa, the crowds were beginning to thin as the population gravitated in increasing numbers toward the Podracer arena at the edge of the spaceport. Most of the shops and stalls were already closed, and the rest were in the process of doing so. Owners and vendors were completing sales and glancing anxiously in the direction of the traffic's steady flow. Amid the confusion and bustle, a Sith probe droid slowly floated along, mechanical eye traveling from shop to shop, from face to face, searching. Over 100,000 beings had filled the Podracer arena by mid-morning, jamming into the grandstand seats, crowding onto the broad viewing platforms, filling the available space. The arena became a vast sea of color and movement and sound in the emptiness of the surrounding desert. Flags and banners bearing the insignia of the racers and their sponsors waved over the assemblage, signifying favorites and creating impromptu cheering sections. Bands played in support of some racers, and isolated horns and drums beat in wild appreciation for all. Vendors walked the aisles, carrying food and drink from canopied stands below to sell to the crowd. Everywhere, excitement and anticipation was building. Then a roar erupted as the racers began to emerge from the main hangar on the far side of the start line. One by one, the pod racers hove into view, some towed by Eopees, some by hand, some by repulsor sled, all part of a long procession of pilots, pit crews, and hangers-on. Standard-bearers, each carrying a flag that identified the pilot and sponsor, marched along, forming a colorful line in front of the assembly of podracers. Overhead, the twin suns of Tatooine shone down with a bright, hungry glare. As the racers moved onto the track in front of the arena stands, a flurry of movement in the royal box signaled the arrival of Jabba the Hutt and Gardula, his female friend. Slithering into the cooled interior of the box, the two Hutts oozed their way along the flooring to their designated places amid the bright silks that draped the rough stone. Jabba came foremost, proceeding directly to the arched overlook where he could be seen by the people of Mos Espa. Lifting his pudgy arm in greeting, he basked in the crowd's appreciative roar. Gardula muttered her approval, nodding her necklace head on the end of a thick, shapeless body, slitted eyes glittering. A coterie of humans and aliens filed in behind the two huts, guests of Mos Espa's rulers on race day, a coveted designation. A line of slave girls of varying species came last, chained together, there for the amusement of those who had chosen freely to attend. Below, the Podracer pilots formed a line facing the royal box, and on command bowed deeply in recognition of and to pay homage to their benefactor.
"Chabasso,"
Jabba rumbled, his deep voice echoing through the sound enhancers and out across the flats.
"Tam kachi bunta rulia, ki mad aruda duwundi. Welcome."
The crowd roared some more, arms and flags waving madly. Horns sounded as Jabba began his introduction of the racers.
"Kumati, Sebulba tuta pixelito."
The Dug, standing immediately next to Anakin, rose on his back legs and waved to the stands. A band played wildly in support,
and Sebulba's fans and anxious bettors, depending on the odds that favored the Dug, cheered and shouted in response. One by one, Jabba recognized the Podracer pilots. Gascano, Bull's Roar, Ben Quadanaros, Alder Bido, Odie Mandrell, Zelbri, Mars Guo, Clegg Holdfast, Bozzy Baranta, Juan Sandage. Anakin listened to the names, shifting anxiously, eager to begin. A glance over his shoulder revealed Kitster at work, attaching the radon ulzers to his pod with the Steelton cables, checking the fastenings with sharp tugs.
"Marnik, Tuta Hawk,"
Jabba boomed.
"Team Topigalis, Tuta Munus Mandel. Anakin Skywalker, Tuta Tatooine."
Applause burst from the crowd, though it was not as enthusiastic as it had been for Sebulba or Gascano or several of the others. Anakin waved in response, eyes traveling over the thousands gathered, his mind already out in the flats. When he turned to walk to his racer, his mother was standing in front of him. Her worn face was calm and determined as she bent down to give him a hug and a kiss. Her eyes were steady as she backed him off, her hands gripping his shoulders, and she could not quite mask the worry reflected there. "Be safe, Annie," she told him. He nodded, swallowing. "I will, Mom. I promise." She smiled, warm and reassuring, and moved away. Anakin continued on, watching Kitster and Jar Jar unhitch the Eopies so that Kitster could lead them away. R2-D2 rolled up to Anakin and beeped with approval and reassurance. C-3PO solemnly warned against the dangers of driving too fast and wished his master well. All was ready. Jar Jar patted the boy on the back, his billed face a mask of worry and consternation.
"'Tis very loony, Annie. May the goods be kind, me friend."
Out of the corner of his eye, Anakin saw Sebulba wander over from his own racer and begin examining the boys. Hitching along on his spindly legs, he worked his way around the radon ulzers with undisguised interest. Stopping finally at the left engine, he reached up suddenly and banged hard on a stabilizer, glancing around quickly to see if anyone had noticed. Padme appeared and bent down to kiss Anakin's cheek. Her dark eyes were intense. "You carry all our hopes," she said quietly. Anakin's lower lip jutted out. "I won't let you down." She gave him a long stare, then moved away. As she did so, Sebulba sidled up to him, his wizened, whiskery face angling close.
"You won't walk away from this one, slave scum," he wheezed softly, grinning. "You're Batapudu."
Anakin stood his ground, giving the Dug a stony look. "Don't count on it, slime face." Qui-Gon was approaching, and Sebulba backed away toward his own racer, malevolence mirrored in his flat stare. Horns blared, and a new roar rose up from the crowd. Jabba the Hutt oozed to the lip of the royal box, his thick arms lifting.
"Kabaza kundi datam haruda," he growled. "Let the challenge begin."
The roar of the crowd began to build even further. Qui-Gon helped Anakin climb into his pod. The boy settled himself in place in the seat, securing his straps, fitting his old battered racing helmet over his head, and bringing down his goggles. "Are you all set, Annie?" the Jedi Master asked calmly. The boy nodded, eyes intense, steady. Qui-Gon held his gaze.
"Remember, concentrate on the moment. Feel, don't think. Trust your instincts."
He put a hand on the boy's shoulder and smiled.
"May the Force be with you, Annie."
Then he backed away, and Anakin Skywalker was alone. Qui-Gon moved quickly through the crowd to the viewing platform, where Shmi, Padme, and Jar Jar waited. He glanced back only once at Anakin and found the boy calmly fitting his goggles in place. The Jedi Master nodded to himself. The boy would do all right.
He mounted the viewing platform with Jar Jar and the women just as it began to lift into position for the race. Shmi gave him a worried, questioning look.
"He's fine," Qui-Gon assured her, touching her shoulder.
Padme shook her head doubtfully.
"You Jedi are far too reckless," she said quietly. "The Queen..."
"The Queen trusts my judgment, young handmaiden," Qui-Gon interrupted smoothly, directing his words only to her. "Perhaps you should, too." She glared at him.
"You assume too much."
The viewing platform locked into place, and all eyes turned toward the racers. Energy binders were engaged, powerful electromagnetic currents arcing between coaxial plates, locking the twin engines of each pod racer together as a single unit. Now the engines themselves began to turn over, their booming coughs and rumbles mingling with and then overwhelming the roar of the crowd. Flag bearers and pit crews moved hastily aside, clearing the start line beneath the arch that marked the beginning and end of the race. Overhead, a red light held the racers in place. Anticipating the green, the pilots gunned their engines, the massive casings shaking with the force of the power they generated, the cables that bound them to the pods and their drivers straining to break free. Standing next to Qui-Gon, Jar Jar Binks covered his eyes in dismay.
"Me no watch. Dis gonna be messy."
Though he could not bring himself to say so, the Jedi Master was inclined to agree.
"Steady, Anakin Skywalker," he thought to himself. "Concentrate."
Then the light over the starting line flashed bright green, and the race was underway. 13. When the starting light turned green, Anakin Skywalker jammed the twin thruster bars to the extreme forward position, sending maximum power to the radon ulzers. The big rocket engines bucked, roared like a caged beast, and promptly died. The boy froze. All around him, racers shot from the start in a cacophony of sound and a flashing of bright metal. Sand fountained in the wake of their passing, clouding the air in a whirlwind of grit. In seconds, the boy was alone, save for Ben Quadanaros's quadrupod, which sat stalled at the starting line in mirror image of his own. Anakin's mind raced desperately. He'd fed in too much fuel from a dead start. The reworked engines couldn't handle all that power at once if the racer wasn't already moving. He yanked back on the thruster bars, returning them to the neutral position. Ratcheting back the switches to the feeder dump, he cleared the lines, then sealed them anew. Taking a deep breath, he pressed the ignition buttons. The starters cranked over and caught, and the big radon ulzers roared to life with a booming cough. He fed in fuel more cautiously this time, impatience flooding through him, then slid the thruster bars forward smoothly. The engines shot ahead, dragging the pod and the boy after them, exploding out of the start. Anakin gave chase with single-minded determination, not bothering with anything but the dots in the distance that marked the location of the other racers. He tore across the flats, the whine of the pod's engines growing steadily sharper, the land beneath fading to a wash of heat and light. The course was flat and open in the beginning, and he pushed the thruster bars forward some more. He was accelerating so quickly that everything about him turned swiftly to a sun-drenched blur. Ahead, the first set of rock formations rose up against the horizon. Anakin could see the other pod racers now, bright metal shapes whipping across the flats, engines throwing off fire and smoke. He closed on them quickly, the radon ulzers screaming. In an open stretch, he knew there were no other engines that could match them. A flush of white-hot excitement burned through him as he caught the trailing pod racers. He hauled back on the thruster bars as he came up on them, giving himself space to maneuver. He went by two as if they were standing still, angling his way left and then right, threading the needle of space they had left between them. When he was clear, he fed power to the engines anew, and the G-force slammed him back against his padded seat. He caught multi-limbed Gascano next. Easing up to the Troikan snub-nosed pod racer, he got ready to pass. Arch Canyon loomed ahead,
and he wanted to be clear of the others when he navigated through the ravine. Maneuvering cautiously, he prepared to overtake on the right. But Gascano saw him and quickly moved to cut him off. Anakin waited, then angled left for another try. Again Gascano cut him off. Back and forth they slid above the desert floor like a crate dragon chasing a womp rat. A cliff drop off a low mesa appeared as a ragged line on the horizon. Anakin slowed, giving Gascano the impression he was preparing for a drop shift. The wiry pilot, glancing back quickly to make certain where the boy was, held his position until he reached the mesa edge, then took the drop first. The moment he did so, Anakin jammed the thruster bars all the way forward, and his racer accelerated with such speed that it rocketed right over the top of Gascano before the other could do anything to prevent it. The dark crease of the canyon loomed ahead, and Anakin threaded the eye of its needle opening with a seamstress's skill, racing into the cool shadows beyond. The radon ulzers hummed anxiously, the energy binders keeping them in sync, the Steelton cables drawing on the racing pod with just the right amount of give through the wicked turns. Anakin worked the thruster bars with small, precise movements, envisioning the course in his mind, each twist, each deviation, each rise and drop. Everything was clear and certain to him. Everything was revealed. He shot through the canyon and back out onto the open flats. Ahead, beyond a dozen others, Mahonik and Sebulba fought for the lead. The Dug's distinctive X-shaped engines lifted and rose, maneuvering for position, but Mahonik's slender racer was slowly gliding away. Then Sebulba accelerated and swung violently left, careening toward the other pilot. Mahonik reacted instinctively, swinging left as well, and directly into a massive rock formation. Mahonik disappeared in a huge ball of flame and black smoke. Next, it was Zelbri challenging, trying to sneak past Sebulba from above, much as Anakin had done with Gascano. But the Dug sensed his presence and rose to block his passage. Zelbri slid left, drawing alongside, holding fast. Sebulba seemed to lose ground, to give way slightly. But when Zelbri was next to him, the Dug triggered a side vent in his left exhaust. Fire spewed laterally into Zelbri's engine, cutting apart the metal housing as if it were made of flimsoplast. Zelbri tried frantically to move away, but he was too slow. Fuel caught and ignited. The damaged engine exploded, and the remaining engine and its pod flew off into a cliff face and shattered. Without slowing, Sebulba sped away from the wreckage, alone at the head of the pack. In the arena stands and from viewing platforms scattered throughout the course, the crowd watched the progress of the race on handheld view screens, as pictures of the racers were transmitted from droid observation holocams. From a monitoring tower, a two-headed announcer, who bantered incessantly with himself, reported on the leaders. Qui-Gon studied a screen with Padme and Shmi, but there was neither mention nor sight of Anakin. The announcer's twin voices rose and fell in measured cadence, filling the air with their inflection, building in pitch to stir the already frenzied crowd. Qui-Gon stared out into the flats, searching for movement. On his right, Jar Jar bickered with a skinny, sour-faced alien named Fanta, trying to peer over his shoulder, besieging him with questions, trying to make friends in the mistaken belief that because they looked vaguely alike, the Polt would reciprocate his overtures. It wasn't working out. Fanta wanted nothing to do with Jar Jar and kept his back turned to the Gungan, deliberately hiding the screen from view. Jar Jar was growing impatient. Qui-Gon shifted his gaze. In the crew pits, R2-D2, C-3PO, and Kitster waited in solitary isolation. In a private box, somewhat in back of and lower than Jabba's, Watto laughed and joked with his friends. The Toydarian flitted this way and that, catching glimpses of the race on various view screens, rubbing his hands together anxiously. He caught sight of Qui-Gon and gestured rudely, his meaning clear. Below, at the start line, Ben Quadanaros still struggled to ignite the engines of his quadrupod. Qui-Gon closed his eyes and blocked everything away, sounds and movements alike, becoming one with the Force, disappearing into its flow, searching for Anakin. He stayed lost within himself as the roar of the crowd lifted anew, and the sound of rocket engines rose out of the distance. At the edge of the horizon, a clump of dark specks hove into view. On the starting line, Ben Quadanaros finally managed to start the engines of his racer, all four bulbous monsters roaring to life, vibrating wildly within their casings. Engines and pod lurched as Quadanaros locked in the thrusters. But in the next instant, the energy binders collapsed under the strain, the connecting cables snapped, and the engines shot off in four separate directions, exploding against stone walls, rock formations, and low dune banks. The crowd gasped in shock, shielding eyes and covering ears, as the pod and Ben Quadanaros collapsed to the racetrack in a useless heap. Almost simultaneously, Sebulba's racer screamed past the arena, shooting under the finish arch and rocketing off on the start of the second lap. Two other racers followed, their engines roaring loudly as they whipped past, their colorful metal bodies agleam in the midday suns. There was no sign of Anakin. Qui-Gon kept his eyes closed, searching within his consciousness. Beside him, Shmi and Padme exchanged worried glances. Jar Jar still hung on Fanta, pounding him on the back now in excitement as the other grimaced and tried to move away. Three more racers tore past, the sound of their engines dying into silence as they faded from view. A fourth, Odie Mandrell, turned into the pits, the engines of his pod shaking and smoking as he screeched to a stop. Pit droids rushed to service the racer, swarming over the engines. Odie stood up in the cockpit, a big, squat, reptilian Urkit, arms gesturing. But when the engines ignited anew, DUM-4, a pit droid, was standing at the left intake, and the engine sucked it inside, chewed it up, and spit it out the exhaust in a mangled heap. The crowd went back to their viewscreens, intent on the race. Then R2-D2, standing with Kitster and C-3PO at the edge of their station, gave an excited beep. Qui-Gon's eyes snapped open. "Here he comes!" he exclaimed quickly. Anakin Skywalker exploded out of the midday glare, the big radon ulzers howling in fury. Amid the cheers and shouts of his companions and the crowd, Qui-Gon Jinn just smiled. Anakin had begun to overtake the pack. At the beginning of the second lap, Anakin was in sixth place. As the race progressed, he was slowly disappearing into the workings of his racer, becoming one with its engines, feeling the strain and tug on each rivet and screw. Wind whipped by him in a screaming rush, locking him away in its white noise. There was only himself and the machine, all speed and response. It was the way racing affected him, melding his body with the pod and engines until he was a part of both. Moment by moment, the symbiosis deepened, joining them, giving him insights and understandings that transcended his senses and knowledge, projecting him past the present and into a place others could not reach. Approaching Arch Canyon, he bore down on the leaders, young face intense. Skimming the flats, he whipped past Alder Beedo and sideslipped Clegg Holdfast. To one side, a fast-closing Odie Mandrell banked too hard over a sandy rise and caught his engine in the sand. Odie's racer cartwheeled in a spectacular twisting of engines and pod and exploded apart. Anakin was only four racers back from Sebulba and could see the Dug's craft clearly in the distance. Everything happened quickly after that. The racers whipped through Arch Canyon and out the other side in a ragged line, with Anakin narrowing the gap between himself and the others. Tusken Raiders, hiding in the rocks of the cliffs that formed the corner of Tusken Turn, got lucky and hit Teemto Pagalis. Teemto's racer simply exploded and was gone. Anakin flew through the vaporized wreckage in pursuit of the others. He passed Elon Mack and Haba Key in a rush. Ahead, Mars Guo was closing on Sebulba, wary of the Dug, keeping down and away, trying to sneak past. Anakin drew nearer to both, leapfrogging sand dunes in a long depression, easing slowly up on Mars Guo.
Suddenly, Sebulba reached out of his pod's cockpit and released a ragged bit of metal directly into Mars Guo's left engine intake. Metal clashed violently against metal, and the damaged engine began to spew smoke and fire. Mars tried to hold the machine steady, but the failing engine bucked and lost power, causing the pod to veer sharply into Anakin. The racers collided in a shriek of metal, and a leading edge of Mars Guo's vertical stabilizer snagged the Steelton line to Anakin's left engine and released the binding. Instantly, Anakin's pod began to swing violently at the end of its single remaining line, whipsawing back and forth. The radon ulzers continued to act in concert, locked together by the energy binders, but the racer was out of control. Anakin worked the stabilizer pedals with his feet, fighting to hold the pod steady as it swung like a pendulum. The unhooked line snapped viciously in the wake of the engine's exhaust, threatening to tangle or snag on an outcropping and drag the racer down. Anakin groped along the floor of his cockpit, searching for the magnetic retriever. When he found it, he flicked on the power button and extended the retriever out to the left side, trying to make contact with the loose line. The effort forced him to pull back on the thruster bars to cut power, and he fell behind Sebulba once more. Elon Mac, Habaki, and now Abatoki as well swept by him, giving chase to the Dug. Anakin glanced frantically over his shoulder. The bulk of the pack was closing on him once more. After a dozen tries, he finally focused his concentration sufficiently to snag the loose engine line with the retriever and maneuver it back to its hook. Sweat and grit coated his face, and his jacket sleeve was ripped. Casting down the retriever, he jammed the thruster bars forward once more. Stabilized at the ends of the Steelton lines, the pod held steady now as the radon ulzers bucked, and the racer accelerated after the leaders. Anakin caught Elon Mac first and slid around him easily. He was closing on Habaki when Abatoki tried to pass Sebulba. The Dug waited until his rival had pulled alongside, then used the same tactic he had employed against Zelbri. Opening a small side vent in the left exhaust, he sent a gush of fire into the housing of Abatoki's right engine. Fuel in the lines caught fire and exploded, and Abatoki's racer dived nose first into the desert, sending a wide spray of grit everywhere. Habaki flew into it just ahead of Anakin, low and tight to the ground. Momentarily blinded, he swerved the wrong way and caught a piece of one of Abatoki's engines where it jutted from the sand. Engines and pod tangled and crashed in a wild explosion. Anakin followed Habaki into the smoke and grit, blinded as well. A piece of steaming metal flew at him out of the haze, careening off his right engine housing and barely missing his head. But the boy was seeing with more than his eyes, sensing with his mind, calm and steady within himself. He could feel the danger waiting, and he worked the thruster bars smoothly, sliding past the wreckage. Then he was in the clear again, and bearing down on Sebulba. He caught the Dug as they screamed past the arena and under the finish arch for the start of the third and final lap. In his mind, Anakin could see Qui-Gon and Jar Jar watching him, Kitster standing in the crew pits, his friend cheering wildly, and R2-D2 and C-3PO, the former beeping, the latter nattering back at him in response. Padme, her beautiful face framed with worry, and his mother, her eyes filled with terror. He could see them all, as if he were standing among them, standing outside himself, watching the race. He blocked their faces away, banished the images from his thoughts, and focused everything on Sebulba. They were speeding out of Arch Canyon when Sebulba decided to put an end to Anakin once and for all. The Dug knew where all the droid observation cams were situated. He knew the angles of placement and how to avoid giving himself away. Swinging his racer close to Anakin's, he opened the side vent on his exhaust and tried to scorch the boy's engine housing as he had done with Zelbri and Abatoki. But Anakin had fallen victim to that particular trick once before and was looking for it this time. He shifted just above the cutting flame and out of reach. When Sebulba tried to follow, Anakin dropped down again, but too far, momentarily losing control. His racer veered from the course right into a line of warning signs, sending them flying in all directions. Desperate to recover, he lifted the nose of his craft skyward, jammed his thruster bars forward, and accelerated. The radon ulzers boomed. His racer gave a frightening lurch, and he leapfrogged right over Sebulba to take the lead. Down through the first set of caves and past Tuscan Turn the racers tore, Anakin leading, Sebulba right on his tail. At speeds too great for maintaining proper control, the antagonists banked and angled as if safety were of no importance at all. And finally, burst into the clear once more. Again, Sebulba tried to regain the lead, pushing for an opening. Anakin held him off, but then one of the horizontal stabilizers on the left engine began to shudder violently. A momentary vision of Sebulba hammering on his stabilizer just before the start of the race flashed through Anakin's mind. He eased off on the thruster bars, jettisoned the stabilizer, and switched to an auxiliary mount. In the process, he was forced to give way. Sebulba raced past him to take command of the lead once more. Time and space were running out on Anakin Skywalker. He shoved the thruster bars forward and went after the Dug. Sebulba saw him coming and fishtailed his pod back and forth in front of the boy to keep him from passing. Over the courseway they sped, jockeying for position. Anakin tried everything he knew, but Sebulba was a seasoned veteran and was able to counter each attempt. Meta Drop flew past as the racers roared out of the dune hills and onto the final stretch of flats. Finally, Anakin shifted left, then right. But this time, when Sebulba moved to block him, Anakin faked a third shift, drawing the Dug left again. The instant Sebulba began his blocking move, Anakin jerked his racer hard to the right and nosed in beside the Dug. Down the flat, open final stretch of the course the pod racers tore, side by side, the arena stands and warding statuary beginning to take shape ahead. Sebulba screamed in frustration and deliberately swerved his pod into Anakin's. Infuriated by the boy's dogged persistence, he slammed into him once, twice. But on the third strike, their steering rods caught, locking them together. Anakin fought with his controls, trying to break free, but the pods were hooked fast. Sebulba laughed, jamming his racer against the boy's in an effort to force him into the ground. Anakin whipped the thruster bars forward and back, trying to disengage from the tangle. The radon ulzers strained with the effort, and the steering rods groaned and bent. Finally, Anakin's rod broke completely, snapping off both the armature and the main horizontal stabilizer. The boy's pod jerked and spun at the ends of the Steelton cables, shimmying with such force that Anakin would have been thrown from the pod if he had not been strapped down. But it was much worse for Sebulba. When Anakin's steering arm snapped, the Dug's pod shot forward as if catapulted, collapsing the tow lines, sending the engines screaming out of control. One engine slammed into a piece of the ancient statuary and disintegrated in flames. Then the second went, ramming into the sand and exploding in a massive fireball. The towing cables broke free, and the Dug's pod was sent skidding through the flaming wreckage of the engines, twisting and bumping violently along the desert floor to a smoking stop. Sebulba extricated himself in a shrieking fit, throwing pieces of his ruined pod in all directions, only to discover that his pants were on fire. Anakin Skywalker flew overhead, the exhausts from the big radon ulzers sending sand and grit into the Dug's face in a stinging spray. Hanging on to maintain control as he crossed the finish line, he became, at 9 years of age, the youngest winner ever of the Bunta Eve race.
This book is continued on Disc 6.